This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 662, brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again. Get $100 off the Eero base unit and two beacons package in 1 year of Eero Plus. Molecule, the only air purifier that actually destroys pollutants. For $75 off your first order, visit MOLEKULE.com and at checkout, enter iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 662. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Sup?
You're back.
I am. I never run anywhere. Back. That's really how it works, but I wasn't on, so.
It's a metaphor for life.
We are iFanboy.
Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book, call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book as well as other books from the week. We'll do the patron pick if we have time to do some listener mail, patron powers, all the fun stuff, because at the end of the day, this is an exercise in having fun for you, for us, for the everyone involved. That's what you should be getting out of this, is fun. No anger.
Well. That's not water, is it? You're like, no anger. Glug, 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 glug.
Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Exercise some caution. Use your head this week, Josh. Josh had the pick.
I did have the pick. The pick of the week is Amazing Spider-Man number 10. I don't think that was a lock. I had to do the, like, look at everything after the fact. And like, I remember I enjoyed some books a lot this week. And then I was very upset with some books this week.
Sure.
And the former happened earlier. So by the end, I just read a bunch of books I didn't like. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I was like, all right, I read Amazing Spider-Man earlier. I enjoyed that. And then there were several things that I had enjoyed. And I was thinking about, you know, the stuff that sort of made me laugh And I just was like, oh, yeah, that was a really fun Amazing Spider-Man issue. And it was one of those weeks where I like a good mid-run issue, you know? I also like that it did a couple of things that I think we talk about a lot, is that, you know, these characters get changed and then they have to reset the board every once in a while to stop them from being stupid. And I realized that I was like, oh, this issue is fixing these problems, but it's doing it very elegantly. Meaning, we've solved the dumb Black Cat problem, where she's sort of back to being her normal self, and they really fob it off without an explanation, which I am 100% fine with. She's like, I just went through some stuff, and you're like, great, let's move along. We sort of wrapped up the Mary Jane sort of issues. Like, yeah, I had this job, it was great. I don't have it anymore. Okay, you know, Peter and Mary Jane are back together. And I thought that introduction of a new, villain, or at least antagonist in this Thieves Guild thing. And a lot of really funny moments. All those things together. This has been a really good issue. Yes.
This was a really good issue, and it's been a really good series. We talked about it a lot. It's one of my favorite Marvel series. And this is Humberto Ramos on art, who has done a terrific job, along with Michelle Bandini, who did the Mary Jane scenes, who was fine.
Yeah.
But Humberto Ramos' scenes, the Black Cat stuff was terrific. I really loved the scene at the end with the two of them sitting on the roof after they defeated the Thieves Guild and had their heart-to-heart talk. And I really, actually really, really liked her whole point of view. And I thought it was really touching that she, you know, Spider-Man reveals his identity way back in Civil War to the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use Mystic Mumbo Jumbo to erase it. So no one remembered who he was. And she said, basically, I've been a little angry because I know we had a relationship and we've had a long-term friendship, and I don't know who you are anymore. And I realized there's a, you know, someone took that information away from me and there's a hole in my head and heart. And I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it. I don't think anyone's ever dealt with it that way. They may have, but I haven't read it, where
mm-hmm.
the character acknowledges, hey, you ripped this information out of my head. And not just information, but she, you know, they dated a lot. They had feelings for each other. And it'd be like if you suddenly woke up and could not remember the name of your ex or their face, but knew they were there.
Yeah.
And they were always around in a mask too. You may have a whole other issue if that's what your situation is. But I thought that was a great scene. It really was emotional.
Yeah.
And his decision to unmask and tell her his name, I thought was really sweet.
That was a dramatic moment because I'm reading that scene. Like I was like, I don't know which way he's going to go with this.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, there's not a lot in superhero comics at this point that where, you know, like, oh, you really surprised me. But he made that choice. And then the
that
other
was a great body language in that scene.
Yes, absolutely. And also the other great thing from that was that the following thing is that Peter comes home and I just like this because it was like adult shit as opposed to dumb drama shit. Like he tells Mary Jane everything exactly what it is. And she's like, all right. And I just thought, oh, thank God, because I don't have the patience like in real life for stupid drama. And so in this, I was like, oh, good. They're going to just act like adults about this thing because all the other stuff is around that matters. And I just thought that was an interesting choice.
Yeah, I thought this was great. I mean, the Thieves Guild stuff was fun. I like Peter. I like Spider-Man and Black Cat as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I always have. The Avengers stuff was funny.
I mean, like it was a hokey
stuff, but yeah.
It was a hokey dad joke. Almost to have her pull out of like, what about that Find My iPhone app? You know, but I was like, oh, it totally worked. Like, because the geniuses in the room are both like, oh, yeah.
So I remember thinking it, and Ms. Marvel, so all their stuff got stolen by the Thieves Guild, all their, you know, the Eye of Agamotto and Black Widow's gauntlets and all kinds of stuff. And so they've all gathered with Tony and Reed Richards, who, by the way, this is the first time I've seen most of these people interact with Reed Richards. You think they'd be like, hey, you're alive, to find their stuff, and they're all overthinking it. And Ms. Marvel pulls out her iPad and says, hey, they stole my phone, and I've got the Find Your iPhone app on here. And and I liked that she was – it was a great comedic beat where she holds it up and it just bangs.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking that same thing.
Because that is her personality.
I also liked how Riri, who I figured out was Riri, was like, it's great. just there was just little tiny dialogue bits that I thought worked really well. All throughout it, you know, I laughed a couple of times. I liked the bit with this sort of the support group bit.
Yeah,
like it's
Jarvis's little speech to her at the end was great too. Mm-hmm. Like you know, we are not superheroes and we are not powerful and we can't fly, but we are just as worthy of their love and friendship as anyone else is. And I thought that was a great thing because if you think about it, it would be really hard to be the
sure.
supporting character in real life to someone like that. You know, I'm sure celebrities have, you know, people with really famous or rich people feel this way. Like
I'm sure there's also an allegory to some of the comic book creators.
Right.
You know, like you have these people, you know, they're not famous, but they go to conventions. They're, you know, their sort of online lives are different. All that stuff is going on. And they all have, not all, but a lot of them have spouses and they're living like normal lives in this. And it's a weird place to be in. I think that's one way that like a comic creator can sort of like make that line and make it believable.
This is a really good series. Yep. And it looks like Otley's back for the next arc. At least he's in the cover, which usually means he's back. But I've been loving this since it's been back. And I'm glad when you picked it, I was like, yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't my pick, but it was probably a close second.
Yeah,
and it was really just semantics on what was picked.
Good solid issue, and sometimes that's what you need and what you want. And also, you know, it's still somewhat of a novelty to me to have an Amazing Spider-Man book that I'm really enjoying. You know, like I've been, you know, with Superior Foes of Spider-Man, I was like, why can't Spider-Man be like this? And now it is, you know, and it's good, it's fun.
Let's throw you a curveball and talk about my pick before we get to the next book on the list.
Oh, okay,
it's Action Comics 1005.
Okay.
Which, with the Ryan Suk on art, continuing this is my favorite of the two books. There's Action and Superman, obviously, that Bendis is writing, and Superman has been really heavily involved in the Kryptonian stuff and the death of Krypton, and that's less interesting to me. I'm still enjoying it, but this has been the more grounded, which is funny because it's the one called Action, but it's the more grounded story where following a lot of it's Clark Kent. It's run around the Daily Planet and the criminals in Metropolis, the Red Mist character, and so that's a story that I'm more interested in. And the Ryan Suk arc certainly helps. But in the beginning, when the hired goon tries to sell the Dial H for Hero dial to his boss, and then the question shows up and beats them all up, I literally yelped because I don't know the last time I saw that question. And like this, I mean, it could be 10 years since there was since the Vic Sage version, Savage version.
I thought it was gonna be the Phantom Stranger at first for some reason, and I was like, well, that's weird. And then like before I got to the end of the page, I was like, oh, it's the question. And it was the same thing. Well, I haven't seen the question since Rucka wrote Rene Montoya as the question. So whenever was that 52?
Well, that's when she took over. So it would have been Vic Sage would have been before that. So that was a long time ago. That was over 10 years ago.
And then as soon as I saw it, I was like, of course Bendis is gonna write the question. I mean, of course he is. And it's funny because, I mean, we haven't seen the question in a while and I've kind of forgotten. I was like, wait, what's this? What's the deal with him? And so like, it's pretty violent, you know, that bit. He's got blood sort of coming off his fingers. And also Ryan Suk drew actual stars swirling around the bad guy's head. He's got knocked out, which is a whimsy I can very much appreciate.
I mean, you don't get much of him, but it's nice. I mean, he's clearly going to be more involved in this story because he's also hunting the Red Cloud, who is the misty villain that we find out whose identity is in this issue. But before we get to that, I also liked that we brought back the firefighter character, the one who's got a crush on Superman, as she realizes that the government of Metropolis is kind of crooked. They want her to stop investigating the arsons, which we haven't dealt with in a while.
I really liked how that scene was written.
Yeah.
Just the way that, you know, like Wonder Woman is standing right off to the corner, you know, and the way that it was like The Wire. I mean, it was like Carcetti or, you know, whatever. It was, I thought it was really nice. It was funny though, is that she, I suppose this is a criticism, but she's like, it was gross and it's not my usual thing to go to the gala. Cut to her in a perfectly form fitting sequin dress. I was like, come on. Make her look out of place. Like, I get it. It's Ryan Suk. They want to draw beautiful women or whatever. But I was like, this is like a Frank Cho book. What the?
Well, you know.
I know.
And then, you know, I just love the way Ryan Suk draws Superman when he goes into action in the second half of the book. It's just such a good Superman.
Yeah.
And finally, the Mist is revealed to be the new reporter who's been bothering Clark at the paper. So I guess we'll find out about that. But
we've been waiting for that to sort of shake out. That looks like
she was bad.
That looks like a Brent Anderson drawing. That last page.
Let's see.
When she's sitting on.
Oh yeah, it does. But I just love every element of this book. Yeah. I thought the opening scene was great. I liked the sequence in the middle. The Superman stuff was terrific. We broke our streak. We didn't talk about a couple of Bendis issues of Superman in a row, but people started to get worried. Mm-hmm. But we have not stopped reading them.
No.
And I still like them. This would have been my pick if I had to pick this week, but it would have been by inches.
I could see that. I don't think this was quite in the running. I enjoyed it a lot. And talking to you about it made me enjoy it more for sure. But I don't think I had it quite up there. It's just like, none of these. Yeah. You know what? You know what? Almost had a chance. Yeah, Heroes in Crisis 3 almost had a chance. And it's solely for the reason that, like, I don't like the story.
Yes.
Like, I don't like the concept of it.
I just don't.
I know that you don't. And I don't like that, like, the next part of this is going to be, like, there's going to be a Sanctuary series, I guess. I think it was announced or something like that. I think I saw Tom talking about it. Now, despite that, I can definitely appreciate it. And there was
we talked about that with issue two.
Yeah, I know we did, but like this one was the one where with three, like it came together. I was like, okay, I think I know what we're doing here. Like I think we got far enough along that I could get my hooks into it a little bit more, because the first issue was super vague and I didn't really know what was going on. The second one was like, this is good, you know. But I saw what the story is, and there were starting to be some characters to sort of grab on here. We're seeing where Wally West is and why he's there, and I was like, that makes sense. Like it all tracks. You've got this fish man who just keeps getting zapped over and over again, and again, he's a murloc. I liked, you know, that like Booster Gold chose to talk to himself in there. It's all.
It all tracks. Yeah. It just doesn't. Well, not all of it. All of that stuff tracks, and so that all makes sense. As we said last time, the individual scenes are well done.
Yeah.
I don't buy any of the Harley Quinn stuff again. Mm-hmm. Issue two was the issue where she defeated Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, which we didn't buy. And here she kills Wally West with a mallet blow to the head. Which I also don't buy.
Well, she's overpowered and all this stuff. We said that before. But
like, as a superhero, he's taken worse hits.
Yes, I know.
And I don't believe he would allow that to happen. He moves very quickly.
I've heard that. Faster than
most. Faster than most.
Yeah.
I just don't buy that. I you know, for a second, I don't know if they were trying to make you think this or not, but, you know, the whole mystery is who's killed everyone at Sanctuary. And I thought maybe it was going to be Booster's double. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, obviously. I mean, we can talk about the Lee Weeks art. And you have on the scripts here that the art is by Clay Mann and Lee Weeks, which should be reversed because Clay Mann did two pages and Lee Weeks did all the other pages.
Yeah, and also that was another factor to it. Like, I think Clay Mann did a great job, but I know that when I opened this book and I read that sort of first testimonial pages that we have, the 9-panel grid, and I like those. But then we cut to the art of the dude getting zapped through the forest, and then that overhead shot of Wally as great we look shot. At him on the bed through the fan, and I literally went, wow, that's a great page. And
it's a beautiful, beautiful page.
Yeah, and I like Clay Mann. He's doing a great job, but I like Lee Weeks more.
Oh, interesting.
I do. I think that it just...
He's one of my favorite artists. So.
Totally. It's one of those things like... Yes, as we said it before, like the concept, you know, is not personally my favorite thing. There's probably continuity flaws in it or whatever, but it is very thoughtfully done and it's very interesting despite that to me. And that to me, you know, is a strength. You know, like it's one of those like, boy, I shouldn't like this, but I am reading it. I'm not like annoyed. I'm not dropping it, you know?
If they slapped an Elseworlds logo on the front of this, mm-hmm. I would say this is amazing. And everyone should be reading it.
I think if anybody else was doing this, it wouldn't work.
Well, because that's because it's so personal. Yeah. Tom King's experiences with the war he fought, and I get that. But if this was out of continuity and just sort of a Elseworlds interpretation of these heroes dealing with psychological stress and them all getting murdered for it, this would be one of those great standalone DC projects that you could put on a shelf. Probably we're only 3 issues out of 9, so we're not even halfway through yet. But as a continuity piece, I just can't buy it.
Yeah, no, I get that, and I mean, ultimately, like I was like, could I make this pick of the week? Because you know, the other thing is, I have a feeling like there's a lot of chatter about this that I didn't see, like because I saw Tom responding to something about that, and I like stuff about it bothers people, and I was like, I don't know about any of this stuff or care, and I like that I don't. I like that I was taking it on its own. But ultimately, I don't like – it wasn't the most fun, and that's what I've been going with lately.
Right.
But I could have made a case for it. I could have also made a case for Old Man Hawkeye number 11 with Ethan Sachs' razor-sharp script. There were multiple moments where I just thought, oh, he's treading that line. Not in the same way that Donny Cates does, but in a sort of manner that's familiar to that. You're like, oh, you've got that tone just right for this thing.
It's a little less goofy than Donny Cates.
Yeah, but it is goofy. Like, it's goofy but takes itself seriously at the same time, yeah. But in the way that comics used to, and it was great. Like, when we went back and read the Blue Superman stuff, I was like, oh, right. This is ridiculous, but it was taking itself really seriously. there was another not like this joke. I haven't decided whether I like that or not.
it's your albatross as a Hawkeye fan.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, no, it was the repeat. And I was like, does the repeat make it funnier or make it dumber? And I can't decide. And also, I like the fact that really all this is the like the end game of Thunderbolts, which is such a weird thing because that was 25 years ago or whatever it was. And it wasn't like the most popular thing. And they're like, you know what? Let's do this story. And so for me, I'm like, this is perfect. However, I got really mad because the artist is Francesco Mobili, not Marco Cicchetto, who had been doing the rest of it. And I know...
Other than one issue.
Yeah, 7. Sure. But that I get. But this is the run-up. This is the finale. No, this is the climax.
I agree with you. This is the climax of the story. I mean, he's still going to fight Bullseye next issue. But this is a major important issue where he finally confronts Zemo in his headquarters at the Weapon X facility in Canada. And I mean, this is where we've all been heading.
Yes.
At least in Clint's head. In our head, we know Bullseye's out there. But in Clint's mind, this is his denouement.
Mm-hmm.
And to have it not drawn by Cicchetto was an interesting and puzzling choice.
Well, I know that he's moving over to Daredevil, which is going to be written by Chip Zdarsky. But it just it goes with this sort of theme of like we're not. The publishers are not valuing the artist as a consistent contributor factor. And I guess the readers don't in a way either, but
especially for a miniseries. I mean, it's not like it's an ongoing, it's ongoing, I would understand, but this is a contained piece. And again, we had an issue where he didn't draw it, but it was halfway through the run. And this is the big moment.
And also,
I don't know if he's coming on for 12 or not, but
I don't know. But I want to like the art wasn't bad. It wasn't great. There was a couple times where there was a couple storytelling issues on a couple of pages. I was like, but I maybe not even have noticed it if I hadn't been sort of aware to it. But I had really been like I had just been enjoying the whole thing as a package. And this is like I saw The Shins once and it was like an amazing show. And like I was really surprised. I was like, wow, that was great. So they came back the next year and like the whole band was different. And again, that's their right to do it or whatever. But it wasn't the same. You know, like the main guy. Mercer was the same guy, but it just lost something. And this was a special thing, I thought, in sort of this realm of current superhero comics. And such a bummer. Now, that being said, it's a great issue.
I didn't see the twist coming.
Yes.
It was a great twist. I don't know how many arrows Hawkeye has in his quiver, but not that many.
It's best we don't talk about that.
But it was an effective. Anyway, the reveal is that Zemo is he's had many strokes and he's wasting away in a wheelchair. He can't even talk. He can only type with a couple of fingers on a keyboard attached to his wheelchair. And that's how he's been talking the whole time. And he's basically too sad to even get revenge on. Is he?
But he's still like he's offended by the fact that he is supposed to be a Zemo and then Hawkeye is still running around. And I think the thing that I love most about this is, like, I've said for a long time, you know, between Steve Rogers and Clint Barton, those are my two favorite Marvel characters, which is funny because they're sort of opposite sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. But lots of times through the years that we've been doing this show, we will read a story with Clint Barton and I'll say, that was fun, but I don't know who that character was. It wasn't quite right or it didn't track. Or, like, movies are like that. And I was like, this is Hawkeye. Yeah. As I think of him, and it realistically and really well aged, like, oh, it's him as an older person, and it just all tracks, and it was really skillful.
There's a sprinkling of Hawk guy, but not. It's more old school Hawkeye.
But that almost brings it. That's just a way to bring it more into sort of today's sensibility. But that character is still the same, and it tracks. And even in this case, you know, like Kate Bishop works really well in here. If we're gonna talk about a Hawk guy thing, you know,
right.
I like her. I like her relationship with him in this, and it's really good. It's been super fun. And at the end, it's all like, "Are we gonna do more in this area?" And I was like, "Just don't mess with it. It's gonna not be good." But this was just made for me, so it's hard for me to want, you know, be able to be.
I still liked reading it, and this is a great series, and I think we'll probably be talking about it on the year-end show. But it was disappointing that it was not Cicchetto.
It's just such a weird choice, although not unlike, I was like, of course, with two issues to go. No one was like, no, let's do this right.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it over and over again. And this, you know, the double shipping and the whatever, and people have to make their nut and they have to go or do the jobs that they have to do. But it sucks.
Speaking of Marvel 2-in-1, number 12, the final issue of this series, it's just weird.
It's weird. I like it, and I'm letting it go. I'm just saying, okay, so this is all one big 12-issue thing, and to me, it's just a delight. I'm not sure how it fits in, and I know that...
It's almost because this issue, I think it might be less weird if it didn't keep coming out the same week as Fantastic Four.
Yep.
But it's almost like Chip Zdarsky had this plan to bring the Fantastic Four back, and then in the middle of it, they said, actually, we're going to give this the slot. And he just kept going.
Nope. I love that, though.
It doesn't go together. The two stories are literally the same story told different ways. In this issue, they're all back on Earth. Mm-hmm. Just like in the Fantastic Four book that came out this week. They all come back in completely different ways. So who the fuck knows?
And Reed went completely gray between this issue and the Amazing Spider-Man issue we talked about.
Right. Reed's got a gray beard in that one. He's got a brown beard in this one. He has a weird hipster brown beard in Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Like, get it together, editors.
This is my favorite one, though, is the point. And the fact, like, it's weird because somebody knows this is good because they brought in, Ramon Perez to draw it. And he just, yeah. He agreed to, and they went through this thing. And that has a certain energy and feel to it that's fun. You got monsters in this, big Kirby monsters in the street destroying buildings, which is super fun. A jacket got destroyed, which longtime listeners will know is a touch point for us.
I think this is some of the best Perez stuff.
Yeah,
I think a couple of issues were a little wonky, but for the most part, they were good. This was the best one, maybe. Huh. Yeah. It was.
Let Chip Zdarsky write the Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
I'm not. You know what? It's not even that. I was going to talk about Fantastic Four too because I enjoyed that one too. But you do have to do a little bit of mental stretching,
like Reed did.
Yeah, exactly. I think I did that without thinking about it, but it was definitely influenced. And I also like the message that like they got Johnny, like one of the things is they got Johnny over all this stuff. He was like, yeah. I get it. You pissed me off, but you did it to protect me. And that was the wrong choice, but it was because you love me. I can understand that. Let's move along. And so they wrapped that part up. I also hadn't noticed until the end that this is 2-in-1 Human Torch and Invisible Woman, not Human Torch and Thing, which is right. Just a little thing.
They've been mixing it up since the Fantastic Four returned in the book. But
so
it's been a great 12 issues. Yes. It's just weird. Everything is weird. Nothing makes sense, as we know.
Nothing matters. Yeah. Hey, you know what makes sense and what matters, actually, both of those things, is my Eero Wi-Fi router. It is a system, the single router model that we've all been used to. It's not working as much. We have our devices in every place in the house. It's not like you have one computer there. You got walls. You got to deal with all that stuff. And there's just more and more bandwidth going through all over the place. And so to be in that one room in your house where your phone doesn't work or whatever kind of gets annoying. And I know that I'm talking about the bathroom right now. But so I've been using Eero since whenever they first came on the show a few months ago. And I switched off of my previous router. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say a brand, so I won't. Perfectly serviceable, but the idea of having one sort of central unit in the place where I was keeping the other router, which is much smaller and cleaner and looks more like a consumer product, honestly. And then a couple of beacons at different places in my house has sort of made my life a lot easier. It's made the show sound better. I don't know if you know that. I really like the app. I can look and I can see what units are connected to which beacon or which system and move those things around. Everybody gets a profile. I can put, if my kids have a device, I can put a timer on that where it no longer is connected. And it's been really rock steady and good. It updates itself. It's just a lot easier than the previous system was for me. And which is true, because if you go into your Wi-Fi router setting on sort of one of the older ones, you get there by dropping in some IP address that you don't know, and it's all these settings that are really confusing. And
you need a
degree. Yeah, and you can get here, or you need a Ron. and I don't always believe him. But you can sort of be sure that Eero is more up to date. It's got the latest WPA2 encryption. It's updating. I've seen it happen. It does it pretty quietly in the background. And it's just a little easier to handle. And then if that isn't enough for you, they have really great customer support. If you can call, you'll have a Wi-Fi expert within 30 seconds. If you have any questions about your other connected devices, the experts are there to help you with it. You can call them. It's one of those things, if you look up reviews of the company, you'll be like, wow, their customer support's really on tap, which I think is really nice if that's the kind of thing that you think you need. And you never know when you will, by the way. So I say you need to go check this out. If you've been in the market to figure out, I need to figure out where I should go with my Wi-Fi next. It's definitely worth your look. You can go over to Eero.com/iFanboy. You want to use the promo code iFanboy. You're going to get $100 off. $100 off the Eero base unit and two beacons package. And 1 year of Eero Plus, which is sort of their advanced security system. So again, let's go to iFanboy.com. Or I'm sorry, Eero.com/iFanboy and enter the checkout code iFanboy. It's $100 off. And I've really enjoyed it.
So we haven't really talked about the death of Daredevil storyline. I don't think we have at all. Maybe we have.
It's hard. They come out so fast that
Daredevil 612. Yeah, it's true. Charles Soule, Phil Noto. Charles Soule wrapping up his run on Daredevil. Phil Noto, one of our favorite artists. Yep. And I mean, it's been good.
It's been pretty good. I don't know what the death part has to do with anything or sort of where it came from. I just feel like it was a thing to put on top of the book.
It was weird because it's not like they're even pretending he's dead.
Yeah.
You know, not even in a comic way. I'm very curious what you thought because this issue revealed that basically the entire storyline was in Matt's head.
Yeah.
It was in surgery. And you tend to not like that. Sort of.
I did not like that. I was quite upset by it. I didn't like the mystery twin brother thing.
Mm-hmm.
As a super comic booky, and I get it. I mean, like if it had been done in the comic book in 1968, it would have been like it would be a classic. But to me, I was like, it's not really working for me. You know, he sees Karen in his dreams, and you know, I didn't love that bit. I think that the story was strong enough on its own. Mm-hmm. Sort of I think all the lawyer stuff that Charles is really good at, and then the sort of mayor of New York stuff, which is a loose allegory to the presidency, I thought all that worked really well. I did not like this. What's the character that turned out to be his brother, the one with the crucifix on him?
That guy.
Yeah, that guy. I didn't like that at all. Fisk in court, which is Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men, basically, where his ego gets him.
Yeah, but I didn't. I've been enjoying this, but I did not buy that moment that he slipped up so easily. Like he did it. Having slipped up fine, but he did it on like the second question.
Yep.
Which I thought was a little too like really.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Just make a mistake in court.
Yep.
But then I guess that should have been the clue that it wasn't real.
Maybe.
I guess the death part is that he briefly dies on the table while he's being worked on. Because
uh-huh.
It fades to black and he sees Karen and then at the very end we get a heartbeat. So he's back.
So I'm mixed.
Technically he's dead for two pages, I guess.
Yeah, I'm mixed because like I thought generally Charles Soule did a really good run on this. You know, all that Ron Garney stuff at the beginning was good. You know, it was a 5-year run. Which blew my mind.
Or does it just feel like 5 years?
No, he said at the end, 5 years. And I was like, really? Although the last 5 years have gone quite speedy. you know, and that's 5 years, that's 10 years worth of comics or something like that. It's insane. You know, but it, you know, it's been good. I wonder if it was 5 years or just 5 years worth of comics. You know, there were things about it that were good. So I'm going to be thinking of it pretty positively. But I didn't love this part.
Mm-hmm. As soon as it was revealed it was all in his head, I was like, oh, Josh is not going to
like this. Everybody should be mad about something like that. That's such a... Ugh.
I don't mind it, but I get
you're
it.
Out of your mind.
I like those kind of things. But Books of Magic you're still reading.
Yeah, I went back and checked in. I have to remember Tom Fowler's drawing that, and I will always buy Tom Fowler stuff. Last issue was sort of a first issue problem where like, oh, this is kind of cool, but you couldn't really tell what it was. And what was good about this was they moved things forward a little bit. And also it very quickly differentiated itself from a Harry Potter thing. It's important to note, and I checked to make sure, like this came before Harry Potter. Like 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And there were questions at the beginning, you know, like, well, did J.K. Rowling rip this off? And like it was established that she didn't or whatever. And I don't think that's a thing at all. But either way, as you went through this, I was like, okay, I can easily see how this is different than a Harry Potter thing. And it was fun and it was exciting. But it was definitely one of those things where like I got to the end of the issue and I was like, okay, I want more now. Like it's maybe just a little bit decompressed. But it was fun and it feels like a Vertigo book. And I like watching. I'm sort of salivating for like I want Tom Fowler to draw some monsters soon, you know, and I feel like they're working me up to that. So it was fun. It was good.
They're gonna tease it out for you until
that's fine.
You can't take it anymore.
That's fine.
Maneaters number 3, Chelsea Kane, Kate Nimsick. I'm still enjoying this.
I am too, and it included my favorite panel of the week. if we had had the panel of the week feature. But there's a night vision shot with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 corgis in it, and it just says their names over it. And the names are Greg, Merkin, funny, Spider-Man, Curiosity, Amy Pond, Burt Reynolds, and Marsha. And I just laughed a lot on that because it's ridiculous. And there's a wonderful tone in this book. There's a great sense of humor that makes me really happy, and it's fun. And I got hints of that when I read that Mockingbird series. I don't think the whole thing was super strong, but there were things about it that were really good. And I thought that last issue was really good. There's a wacky sensibility, and again it's not really hiding the allegory that's happening here. It's pretty in your face, and
it's totally in your face. And this really allows her to cut loose with all of her frustrations on gender.
Right, but also
in a way you can't really do in a Mockingbird, but you have to kind of hide it. This allows her to really put it in the forefront.
But also, what's important to note is that if that is all the book is, it's boring. But this is at the same time, it's funny, it's imaginative, the characters are interesting, and the bit at the end where we're like, wait, what's going on with these girls is interesting and intriguing.
It's good. If it was just her yelling about how much it sucks, then it wouldn't be fun. But it's done in a funny way. She's right. Venting with humor, and I really like the first scene where the kids are in middle school and health class learning about puberty, and this isn't a societal thing. This is just a biology thing. The guys are reading about what testosterone does, and they're like, yeah, and the girls are like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Because when you hit puberty, it sucks for some ways, and it's awesome in other ways, and it's more awesome, at least in terms of what testosterone does for young boys, and the women have to go through a lot more problems too when they hit puberty. So that was a fun scene.
I just think this is one of those things where, like, there are a lot of shithead trolls on the internet or something, and they'll look at this and be like, oh, it's a feminist thing, and then you stop there. This is a dumb reason to not like something, but like, it's just a good book. Like, it's coming from a feminist perspective, but that doesn't – who gives a shit? I mean, it's good. Like, that's even a good – that's a strength of it. I don't mean to say it that way, but, like, it just backs – it's a good book. I like it.
Yeah. You're right. And there's the cliffhanger was interesting.
Yeah. It's imaginative. So, it's all those things that you want. And I really like the art. So – and it's funny.
Ironheart, number one. Did you read Ironheart, number one?
I read some of it.
Really, Williams. I read it and I thought it was okay. I found myself sort of unconsciously comparing it to Ms. Marvel because they're the biggest two new female characters that have come out of Marvel in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And it didn't stand well to that comparison.
I found myself consciously comparing it to Bendis's Riri Williams, and it was grievously lacking. And then the other thing is that as I was reading it, I went, this is a new comics writer, and this is not a person who's used to writing comics. And so I looked up Eve L. Ewing, and I was exactly right, because I was like, there was just pages of text and nothing happening.
Where did she come from?
She's a writing professor at Chicago, and she does like different stories and poetry and stuff like that. So she's like an academic and a writer. None of those are bad things, but I just was like, this isn't this person. I get why they brought her in. Makes sense on paper, but it's like not good at writing comics yet.
I liked the art. I didn't love it, but I liked it.
I don't like the new outfit.
I don't have any. I didn't read her before, so I don't know what her outfit looked like. But
the costume used to look more like Iron Man.
I just don't remember what her old costume looked like. My biggest criticism would be that she doesn't really have much of a distinctive personality.
Not in this, and she did with Bendis.
In this. Yeah, in this, she's really sort of cookie cutter. So I'm hoping that she develops a personality.
Yeah.
Or at least something that's like sort of sets her apart.
And that, that isn't to say that that this person doesn't develop a sense of how to make a comic book interesting, but there's just a lot of talking I think it was a couple of pages in the middle, which is actually just when I quit reading and I was like, all right, it's fine.
There's a lot you could just sort of, there's a lot of dialogue you can just put your line through.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I've done that, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is super extraneous. Yeah, this is about a 4 or 5 page sequence in the middle. And it's just there's too much, and then her, like, it's a design choice, but the way that they decided to do the Ironheart word balloons is ugly.
So what do you not like about the costume?
I don't I don't like the colors. Like,
is it pink and teal?
Yeah, it's weird. And I don't know. It looked good before. If you had sort of a stylized Iron Man offshoot, that's kind of what she was. So
I guess it's their way of sort of staying in the realm of his colors, but
I know, but I was like, literally just make it red, and then she looks kind of like just a like an anime robot head instead of.
Yeah, the teal is a weird choice.
Yeah, I just don't.
A weird choice.
And there's a little thing over heart, and then the gray. I don't know. I thought it looked fine before. I don't think it was missing anything. I don't think it needed a redesign. I get why they did it, but and then that color theme is actually recreated. You see it all throughout the book.
Yeah, it's a weird color choice.
Yeah.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. We also talk about the patron pick at patreon.com/ifanboy. Everyone who's a patron gets to vote on a book to add to the rundown. And this week, the far and away choice, and they love these anthologies, is DC's Nuclear Winter Special number 1. This appears to be DC's holiday special.
All right.
That's what it appears to be. Because it says happy holidays at the end.
Kind of grim.
Well, they did this, if you recall, for Halloween.
Yep.
Let me tell the horror stories.
I mean, I like that. I think that's you know, you get a framing device.
At the end, it says "Happy Holidays from all of DC Comics." So that would lead you to believe this is their holiday special.
I hope I don't have to read another one.
I actually liked this. I liked it. Against all odds, it features a framing device written by Mark Russell with art by Mike Norton, two of our favorites, in which Rip Hunter is stuck in the future. In Silicon Valley or the beach, either way, with a bunch of tech bros, Silicon Valley, and they want to eat him because it's a Mad Max Silicon Valley scenario, and he has to keep them entertained with stories of old superheroes while he's charging his time ship on their electric car charger, and it's not just a framing device; like he keeps checking in between every couple of stories.
Well, that's because we all want to spend more time with Morgus.
I really liked that framing device. I thought it was funny.
It was great. It was genuinely funny several times, and it was like, oh, that's the Mark Russell that we've really come for.
Max dudes using tech bro language and business talk was funny. And, you know, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 stories. They're not all going to be winners, but I thought they were, some of them were good, and they had some big names on some of these stories, which is unusual. Like, Paul Dini and Jerry Ordway did a Firestorm story that I liked. Actually really liked Steve Orlando's Superman story.
I did not.
Tom Taylor. I really liked Supergirl by Tom Taylor and Tom Derenick. That was my favorite.
That was great. Yeah, that was really good. The first Damian story, when I saw it was Damian, I was like, eh. Then I got to the end of it, I was like, oh, that's pretty good.
Became a bully one.
Yep.
With Cam Smith on inks.
Yeah.
Last time you saw that name. You know, Cecil Casalucci did Catwoman, and Scott Collins drew the Green Arrow story. I like Green Arrow. I like the Old Man Green Arrow.
I like that story a lot. That was probably my favorite. I think there was a moment or two where they threatened to have me not like it. I mean, the very fact, like, this is one of those stories where the thing that occurred to me, I was like, when you put these characters in their costumes when they're old at a holiday party, it's ridiculous. like old Grandma Mockingbird Black Canary in booty shorts. With her grandkid, I was like, eh? And he actually drew like the line of her ass cheek.
Yeah.
As they're walking away from the kid, I was like, come on. But overall, like, actually very similar to Old Man Hawkeye. I was like, that's the guy. Like, that's the character aged. I really liked that story a lot. I thought it was really strong.
And I actually really liked the Aquaman story.
Yes.
And it was funny because, actually, that was one of the best ones. And then it you know, it's Aquaman. All these stories take place in a future, either post-apocalyptic or just a future. Are they all post-apocalyptic?
Yeah, they're all they're all after a nuclear event, basically. Like, the world has been scoured.
So Aquaman's been sent down to the depth of the sea to gather this goo that helps eat
radiation.
And Old Man Aquaman goes down there and gets the goo, and then he comes back, and it says, not the end, and then I was like, oh, that's weird. It just didn't. And then but then Mark Russell comments on it in the in the intervening scene. That Aquaman story didn't have an ending. And I was like, I like this. This I like.
Yeah, I mean, like, as far as these go, there were some good bits in here. There's some good stories.
I think they're more good than bad. That's what I'm trying to say.
And I think that the framing device of it sort of all being, you know, nuclear wasteland stories is kind of fun. And you know, really, Mark Russell made this work. If it hadn't been for him, it might have been a little more bleak. But I think that helped us lift it up.
I think also the difference between this and the Halloween one was the Halloween one was all very kind of mean horror stories about those characters. And this was not that. These were all the characters, recognizably. No one was brutally murdering the Kents here. And they were mostly hopeful. And that's what you kind of want to read right now.
But satirical also. Like, it was it was grim humor. Also, I don't necessarily love the Commandi story, but I loved seeing Phil Hester drawing. I love the way he draws.
Yeah, I didn't love that story. That's my least favorite one, but it was good to see him on art.
Yeah.
And Andy Parks on inks.
Yeah, I mean, they always kind of work together.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was fun. It was I wish I hadn't realized I had to read it at about 12:15 p.m. But I finished it.
PM would have been fine.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I would have been working.
But I, you know, fine. Hats off to you. I don't know. Actually, I guess I would have read it because I always read the holiday special. I didn't realize it was the holiday special. But, you know, I never see Jerry Ordway draw anymore. So that was nice. His Firestorm story. Brad Walker. There's some good people in this book. So I'm happy we read it. I'm happy they picked it. Let's do ratings.
Ratings.
Out of five.
This is hard.
Overall ratings.
Three?
I think three and a quarter? 3.5. So
3.25.
3.25.
Do we have to agree now?
No, but I'm just saying that's where I was going when you said three. I was going to bump it up to 3.25. But
lately we have been we've been trying to come to an accord, which is kind of nice.
3.25, and sticking with it is irrelevant. It's a special.
Yep.
So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and vote. So add a book to the rundown. And we thank everyone who does vote every week. We do appreciate it. Now I want to talk about my allergies. I don't know if you know this, Josh. Josh knows, but I don't know if the people out there know. I have really bad allergies. I'm allergic to, someone asks me, what are you allergic to? I just say, what do you got? Because that's basically what I get on my test. In fact, I was just at my allergist 2 days ago getting my yearly assessment. I'm living with it since I was 10 years old. It's a constant presence in my life. And one thing I can tell you for sure is that when you have allergies, sleeping can be a challenge sometimes. And one of the factors is the air that you're breathing while you're trying to sleep. What's in the room with you? Are there allergens? Are there pollutants? Do you have rugs? Is there a lot of dust? All of that will contribute to the quality of your sleep and really the quality of your day and, by extension, the quality of your life. If you're not getting good sleep, I can tell you, before I started getting treatment for my allergies, I was a grumpy bastard sometimes because I wasn't sleeping for days on end. Breathing clean air can transform the way you sleep, particularly for those who are asthmatic or allergy sufferers like me. And since we're not immune to the air around us while we sleep, we're still susceptible to the allergens and pollutants in the environment. And that's why Molecule was developed by Dr. Yogi Goswami, a scientist whose son suffered from asthma and who was frustrated by the fact that HEPA air purifiers did not relieve his son's symptoms. And if you have allergies, you probably know HEPA is the sort of standard for purifiers these days.
And it's old.
It's an old standard. It's from the 40s. It's from World War II. So with Molecule, customers have reported feeling energized after the best sleep they've ever had in years. Molecule replaces the 50-year-old antiquated technology we just talked about. Imagine if your phone was the same technology as it was in the 1940s. This is exactly the technology that you're using to clean your air. Molecule introduces a breakthrough science that is finally capable of destroying air pollutants at a molecular level. Molecule's PECO technology goes beyond HEPA filtration to not just capture but completely destroy the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can trap. That's a lot more pollutants that you're going to be getting rid of in your room. Molecule makes a meaningful impact for asthma and allergy sufferers. One customer even said that she was able to breathe through her nose, quote, for the first time in 15 years. Molecule doesn't just have good groundbreaking technology on the inside, but creates a complete and clean air purification experience. They've been called by many the Apple of air purifiers. Molecule's technology research was backed by the EPA, and Molecule's technology development has also been funded by the EPA. So they're EPA compliant. Molecule's technology has been personally effective and verified by science, but most importantly, it's been tested by real people. Molecule's already been helped allergy and asthma sufferers around the country better cope with their conditions, significantly reduce their symptoms. Less symptoms, better sleep. That's what people with like me are always looking for. So here's what you do. If this is interesting to you, if you've got allergies like I do, for $75 off your first order from Molecule, visit molecule.com. That's M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com. And when you go to checkout, enter code IFANBOY. and you get $75 off your first order from Molecule. So I know there's a lot of people out there with allergies, people out there looking for better sleep, maybe want a better purifier in their room. You can't hurt to go check out Molecule.com, MoleKule.com, coupon code iFanboy.
He's not kidding about those allergies, people. He's not. In fact, I don't think he sold it enough. let's move on. This would be shocking if one of these patron powers doesn't have something to do with allergies, by the way.
Mine don't either.
Anyway, so every week we like to thank some of the people who are supporting us via patreon.com/ifanboy. If you give it a $5 level or higher a month, then you get on the list, which we are diligently working our way through. First up is Samuel Weiss. Samuel Weiss is always able to deliver a perfect metaphor for any situation, every time.
Perfect metaphor. So yeah. what would you say for this situation?
I'm not Samuel Weiss, Connor. I don't know why you thought, because right now I was like, oh no, I'm panicking. I can't think of anything. This is like when a bus goes off a cliff as far as a joke. You know, you're driving along and all of a sudden, you know, he will help you understand any situation with just a few words that you go, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. That's how it is. That's what he can do every single time. There's not going to be that pause that you heard from me. It's Ray. Right. And because of that, you're gonna feel confident in it even more so as an analytical device.
He's got him just snapping him off left and right.
Yeah.
Do the other members of his team hate him?
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah, it's not – no one wants that. I mean, it's not like he can stop doing it. He's just always – oh man, this lunch is like, actually that's a simile, but I'm going to include similes and metaphors. I think it's
similes and metaphors. Yeah. So he can do either one.
Yeah. I like metaphor as a word better, but I feel like we use simile more colloquially.
Jivan Devasi is the most efficient human being in the world.
Wow.
That means there's no wasted effort or time with Jivan in anything he does. Scheduling, he's always doing his errands the most efficient way possible. He does his work the most efficient way possible, cleans the house, cooks. There's nothing wasted.
Do his coworkers hate him?
I'll tell you what, his Saturdays, you would not believe them. I mean, he's knocking everything out before noon.
Oh, so I was going to say, because at first you stressed me out because I thought, oh no, his Saturdays are too busy and he's got no chance to recover like someone else I know, me. And but instead you're saying like, no, he makes time for that. It's part of his efficiency.
Yeah, no, by being so efficient in the things he has to do, he creates more time for himself.
I'm going
to
tell you what he doesn't do.
What?
He doesn't wake up and go, yeah, I'm going to look at my phone for 3 hours. Oh, what happened? It's lunchtime? He's not doing that. He probably doesn't have a smartphone.
Right. It's not efficient.
Well, maybe he only uses it in efficient ways.
That's true.
I guess it would depend.
He's always got great battery life because he's never wasting it.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah.
But he always knows an efficient way to keep it charged while he's doing things. He's got little key wireless chargers all over the house. He just sets them down on them. I think I just gave everyone a life tip. Jack Window. Good names this week, by the way.
Uh-huh.
He can always judge a book by its cover. Is that book any good? Let me see it. Oh, it's good.
that took me a second. I was like, yeah, but
it was very literal. That was not a metaphor. That was, you know, like he doesn't waste a lot of time going, am I going to like this? Is this book going to
be
worth
interesting
it?
Is, you know, different volumes or versions of books have different covers, but he knows everything.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the cover's still going to say something no matter which way they change it. It's not like, oh, I can... You know, and even if it's one of those just horrific crimes against nature movie poster covers of a book that has existed for 20 years before the movie came out, he can still tell you, you know, based on that. It's a gift from me.
Joe Sturtz always knows who's hooking up.
You've just come up with something that has no place in my world.
He walks into – well, no, you go to an office sometimes.
Okay, that's true.
He walks into a room and he just knows those two are secretly hooking up.
Okay, here's the question, and you may not be able to answer this.
Uh-huh.
Is this a pheromone thing or is he seeing like trace evidence or is it
– He just knows. Whatever he reads, the body language or it could be he sees the glances or he sees the pheromones or – but what he reads the environment and he just knows – And it's not always a secret, you know. He can see a couple and know they're hooking up. But he can walk into an office or a club or wherever and be like, oh, those two are hooking up. Those two are hooking up. Those three are hooking up. You know, so he just knows.
That's useful. Certainly from a management perspective, it's helpful.
Or a marriage perspective.
Oh, see, I wasn't even thinking of that.
It's funny.
Oh, you can.
I just saw you talking to the mailman, and you're hooking up.
Well, does his wife know that, or girlfriend, or boyfriend, or whoever?
It's up to Joe to be upfront with his powers with his people.
Should he?
I'm not his moral compass.
I'm saying, but from an ethical standpoint, do you share that, or you think you should have an obligation?
I feel like you have to because you'd have too much fun as their significant other knowing who's hooking up.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
People
yeah,
love gossip, and they'd be like, Joe.
That is a bonus.
Come to my office.
Mm-hmm. And you could do it like if you just go to restaurants and you like see that waitress and that guy. Oh, wow. Okay, now it's getting better.
No, it's super fun.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. For everyone who's getting those patron names, of course, went to patreon.com/ifanboy to help support the show. We're keep these short this week. So go there if you want to get on that list, or if you just want to help the content on the show. You can also get over to ifanboy.threadless.com. You have enough time before the holidays to check out our t-shirts and all the other products that they can make out of those things. I'm telling you, the Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters shirt, it's really feeling like a gift for anybody.
Oh, for sure.
In its various forms. Of course, you can just go to ifanboy.com/support. You can do PayPal if that's a thing that you'd like to do. And then finally, go over to ifanboy.com/Amazon at this time of year. That would be great. You'll find the links to all the books that we've done on Booksplode. There's always a link to Amazon on the pick of the week. And there's a general link to Amazon where if you're doing your shopping right there, that would be rad if you could do through that. And thanks very much. Let's do some audience questions. I don't even know what the time is.
We're good. All right.
Ryan from Philly, Adelphia, says, which Marvel or DC superhero would provide the overall highest quality reading experience if you read them from their first solo title all the way through to the present? So if you started with Fantastic Four number one from Stan and Jack, and you read every FF book up through this week's book.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's been thinking about this since Mark Waid and Chris Samnee wrapped their Daredevil run. It's a pretty good amount of thinking, by the way.
That's fine. Respectable. I mean, it's not
Well, it's the only.
Could it be better? Sure.
Well, I mean, he could have sat on the question for another 3 years just to make sure.
It's actually a really great question.
It is a good question.
I don't think we've ever been asked.
I know.
It's always great to get a question that we've never been asked in the 13 years we've been getting questions.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of answers. I don't know if you could pick the best.
Well, right. So he's asking for us to go. I'm guessing just to go with our gut, because in all these questions there is the problem of the 80s and 90s, which happened.
I mean, it's going to be fucking stereotypical, but I don't know how you don't say Batman. First of all, he goes through all the ages, and not all these characters do. So you got Golden Age stories, Silver Age stories, Bronze Age, Modern Age stories. The 90s wasn't that bad for Batman because you had like Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle on books and guys like that, you know, really quality guys. He never went through that mullet period of Batman.
Okay, yep.
And then a lot of the classic stories, run through Batman. So
it's interesting because the way that he phrased it is which would provide the highest quality reading experience. So right away, you've got what is a really subjective thing there.
Sure.
Which is interesting. So your answer, which I was like, oh, that's really right for you. It's probably not how I would have approached it, I think.
There's a ton of them, obviously, but
But if you think about it in the way that you phrased it, there's a historical study context though, which is kind of interesting. So you could say the same thing about like Captain America. It would allow you to see everything, you know, in a way.
I've seen it all.
He's
another great one because much like Batman. I'm wrong. I was going to say he never went through a bad period. There was armor cap. But that was a short period. That 90s period was still pretty good with
Mark Gruenwald
and Kieran Dwyer. And that was a good – that 90s period was good.
Yep, that's true.
But – so I don't know. I still have to say Batman, but I'm curious who you say.
I think it's tough. My instinct is to kind of say Avengers.
That was one I thought of as well.
Because it goes through a lot of really interesting eras. A lot of stuff flowed within and out it. I think in the time that I have been reading comics, the good has outweighed the bad. The good has been very good. Bad was just kind of boring. But you would really see an amazing sort of cross-section of creators, both who were very established, but also who established, you know, a thing. You know, the beginning is Kirby and Lee. And then, you know, you get into Roy Thomas and sort of and all that rad stuff in the 70s and early 80s.
And you get
if you're talking about quality, that's the Marvel Universe.
So it's all
of that stuff, but there is the through line of the Avengers being the Avengers.
Especially in the last 20 years. I mean, there's a period of time in the 90s where the X-Men became the center of the Marvel Universe. And I still like the Avengers books then. They may not have been
as... The Avengers books were good then, though. I didn't like X-Men.
Right. I read them both, and I still prefer the Avengers. But, since 2000, the Avengers have been the center of the Marvel Universe. So you got almost 20 years of great stories, and then you have the whole 80s period, which was terrific, then the 90s, and you got George Perez and Kurt Busiek. And,
if I'm going to take one sort of exception to this, if I was to give sort of an alternate answer,
he says, which Marvel DC superhero? The Avengers aren't a superhero. The Fantastic Four, which is his own example.
If I had to choose an alternate, I'm going to tell you, and I haven't read all of this, but I just have a feeling I would go for Doctor Strange.
Wow.
Because I think as a comic book historian perspective, I think a lot of interesting things are happening in there. And it's not consistent.
There's probably only 200 books.
Yeah, but because of that, it feels like the people who worked on it had something to say, and it would go away and it would come back. There are things there that happened in those comics that I don't think were widely popular, but were hugely influential.
My alternate Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely something to be say about the G, but there would be some slogs.
Scott in Florida has two questions. First, now that Stan Lee is gone, who is the greatest living comic creator?
I don't have an answer for this, and I've been thinking about it, and I was hoping that you could help fill me in.
There was one time back when we were doing the show, FMBoy Full Time, we were doing the video show, that we were going to do a series of video shows counting down, like ranking the creators, the all-time comic creators. They weren't all living, but we were going to rank them. So it's hard to pick, and this is living.
So just to put it in context, Stan Lee was 95?
Yes, he's about to turn 96.
And he started in the 30s, in the golden age, and he was the youngest of that group. He was younger than Jack. He was younger than most of those guys, younger than Eisner. And we lost a lot of those guys through the 80s, or through the 90s and the 2000s. We got a chance to talk to a few people who were living while we were doing the video show and the audio show. So I did Jerry Robinson. I talked to Qbert. We missed Eisner by a bit.
But none of those guys, none of those guys are still alive, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like we definitely I think Stanley's kind of the last of that generation. The thing that popped into my head, and I don't think that this is the greatest living comic creator, but I am amazed at how long he's been around and how good his work still is. It's Richard Corbin. He still does horror stuff, and I think he's in his 80s.
Well, I would say this. John Romita is still alive.
I had that question, if John Romita was still alive.
He's 88. So.
Wow. And he hasn't worked in a while. So that's Corbin just put stuff out. Is it Neil Adams? Is it Denny O'Neill?
I think you got to have a discussion that involves John Romita, Neil Adams, Frank Miller,
Walt Simonson. I don't know how old he is, but he's got to be near 70.
But I meant age is one thing. He's a great creator. I don't know if you put him in the Neil Adams camp or though.
Oh, I think. I don't know. I that could be a discussion.
Or Romita. I think he's at the top of the second group.
Okay.
I think you're talking about purely legendary.
Okay.
But then again, what does greatest mean to you? Is it most talented? Is it most influential? Is it,
yeah,
you know?
I mean, it gets really tricky. It's a good question, but I think one thing that it does highlight is that that generation is gone now.
Okay, well, let's just put a stake in it. If you had to pick a name.
Starenko?
Starenko's still alive. This is by no means binding. If you had to pick one person to call the greatest living comic creator, who would it be?
Oh, that's hard. I'm still trying to feel. I mean, my instinct right then is to say Neil Adams. But there are stipulations that go along with that where, you know, like in terms of the guy who did the work that mattered the most, both, honestly, on and off the page.
Mm-hmm.
You could make an argument for John Byrne or Chris Claremont, or you could make an argument for Alan Moore.
For sure.
It's a really tough question.
I'm going to say Lee Weeks. Next question.
In light of DC messing up the Dick Grayson character, could Connor recommend some of the best Dick/Nightwing stories? And I just want to point out that when he says Dick here, it's specifically the context of the character Dick Grayson.
Right.
He does not want a great Dick story.
Damn it. I had a bunch of them ready to go.
Sorry.
First of all, we don't know he's messed up. We suspect he's messed up, but we don't know it for sure.
Currently, he's askew.
His name is Rick currently. Sure, there's lots of great Dick Grayson stories. The whole Chuck Dixon run that he did in the solo book, which lasted like 90 issues or something crazy like that, is terrific. It's a really great run, one of my favorites from that era. The New Teen Titans with George Perez, Marv Wolfman is great Dick Grayson. That's where he first becomes his own man. That's where he grows as a character beyond just a sidekick. Now that I'm feeling the pressure now, that's tough. Is all on me.
The best that I ever read, and I am not nearly as versed as you are, the best that I ever read was that early 2000s Chuck Dixon Nightwing series.
The definitive Nightwing story is that Chuck Dixon run.
But I would also say, like, you know, that the Wolfman Perez Teen Titans was really the thing that you know made him the character he is now. So
yeah, if you had to pick two, those would be the two runs. So you got, and those are all in trade. They're all collected. So DC has been slowly collecting the Chuck Dixon run. I think they're into 6 or 7 volumes at this point, and the entire run of Wolfman Perez is in omnibus form. So you can read those right now if you want to. Go back and do so. Those are the two best, I think.
Yep.
contact@ifanboy.com. That's where you can reach out to us, like Scott and Ryan, if you want to get in the show. Thank you both. Good questions. Let's talk about some stuff real quick. Dreadnought Legends number 1, still on Steam, available on Comixology. $1.99, half the price of your regular book. So if you want to check it out for the holidays, give me and Paul Montgomery and David Campo and Priscilla Petrates and Marco Lesko a present. You can spend $1.99. I check it out on Comixology. It's a good time. Had by all.
You can also listen to our most recent Booksplode podcast. That's the one where we review a single volume of some kind of comics, sort of an aside to the show. We do that bi-monthly. The latest one was Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies. And again, I just want to say, before you write to us to tell us that it's a criminal book, we do figure it out by the end of the show.
Yeah, it's in the show itself.
I think that is key. Prior to that, there was a Talksplode with Katie Cook just before that. Now, we should have a Talksplode scheduled for December. There's a really good chance that will get pushed to early January just because it's harder to get those done. But I have a couple of folks in mind, and I'd rather have good shows than fast shows.
Yes, in fact, that's probably most likely what's going to happen. Next month, you'll get a Talksplode and a Booksplode.
Yep.
So here's the holiday schedule for the remaining time we've got with you. Next week is our final Pick of the Week episode of the year, episode 663. We'll be back with 664 January 6th. But in the intervening time, there'll be 3 shows for you. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is going to come out sometime around 12:15. That's correct. And so I'm looking at the calendar. The All-Media Year-End Roundup, which is our favorite show to do of the year, where we round up all the media plus the comics of the year, will come out in 12:16. And then the Aquaman show comes out sometime around 12:23. Those will be 3 shows for you to enjoy in the intervening time while we're on a break. And if you're a patron, this weekend, December 2nd, is the final patron hangout of the year. So come by and have a good time with us in the normal time, 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern. Come join us. Who knows what we're going to talk about?
You can also head over to ifanboy.com to find all of our podcasts and a vast trove of content that has been there for a longer time period than I would like to focus on. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following at ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually, J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and at CSGO Patrick on Instagram.
And real quick, speaking of Twitter, if you go back on our Twitter feed, ifanboy, twitter.com/ifanboy, you'll see we retweeted a link in which the hometown of Darwin Cook is looking to name three new streets. They sent out a survey online, and we would love it if you felt so to go to that link and fill it out and suggest that Darwin Cook have a street named after him in his hometown. It's a quick survey. It takes you like 30 seconds to fill out. And it's just a quick note. At one point, it says if this street's being named after a person, that we need a consent form from their relative. That form has already been sent in by his widow, so you don't have to worry about that. She's already sent in the consent form. But if you go there, literally it takes 30 seconds to fill it out. Darwin Cook Way is what we're suggesting. he would have been thrilled to have a town, a street in his hometown named after him. So if we would appreciate it. If everyone listening to this show did it, I think he'd probably win in a landslide. So go check it out. It's on our Twitter feed, twitter.com/ifanboy. You don't even have to have a Twitter account to go to that link and find the post. We posted it on Friday, so if you go back in the feed, you'll find it there. I do appreciate it. People have done it already. We thank you for those who have. And if you like this show, please write a review or leave a star rating on iTunes. That's for this show or any show you listen to. It's a great way to give a holiday present to your favorite podcast is to help them out by leaving a review or just to click on a star rating. And they all thank you, as we do as well. Even better than that is to tell your friends. Word of mouth is the best way to get people to listen to the show. And we do appreciate everyone who does that, helping us spread the iFanboy love all around. Until next week, the final show of the year.
Connor. And I'm Josh, and I think we all need to give Connor a hand for getting through this without sneezing or coughing. You don't understand what a challenge that is, right? This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.